It is day four of back to school. I don't know where the time goes, but here we are, and it is Thursday already. I want to thank TNT Auto and Schwederman Construction, along with Risch Plumbing and Enyart's Interior Touch, and the Hope Camp Funeral Home, as we say good morning to Mark Runs, track team coach, state champs this year, Mark.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I certainly appreciate you stopping by. What I wanted to ask you is share with us a bit about your background, where you came from originally, and what got you into education.
Sure. I'm a graduate of Coldwater, graduated in 1998. My dad was the dentist in town, so that kept us around. Went down to Cincinnati for about 10 years, and then came back up here after I graduated from University of Dayton and get into teaching and coaching and just the love of doing all that and giving back to our community.
What drew you to track? Did you run in school yourself?
I did not. I was on the baseball team.
That works.
I played baseball and a little bit of like club baseball in college, but there was a need. I had coached junior high track for 1 year. Mr. Goodwin came to us and said, I need somebody. And so that was a fill-in position. And then the next year, the head coaching position came open, and it sat for a while. And eventually, Mr. Goodwin approached me and said, can you do this temporarily? And it's been about a decade now. So
you might as well stick with it. let's also talk about, in general, you know, winning that state title, you know, what that was like, what that was about, and what it took to accomplish that.
Sure. Obviously, we got to have good talent. The year before, this past year, we were obviously able to reach the top of that mountain and win the state title. The year before, we were state runner-up with the girls, all in Division III. But things just kind of came together with us. We had a Division I talent in Izzy Zahn. She's at Iowa to run track there. She was obviously our headliner. She set a bunch of state records. She has all kinds of school records here for Coldwater. But then the influx of our younger talent with last year they were sophomores, and our freshman girls added to that, and that was really kind of the catalyst that kind of brought us over the top. So we were able to score enough points and secure that win pretty early in the meet, so it wasn't too stressful for us. But the girls were doing a tremendous job, and they work really, really hard. We've been having a lot of success in the time that I've been doing this.
And how many meets do you have to win to get a state title? What's that process like?
Yeah, the whole process is really good. I mean, the MAC is tremendous. I mean, all of these schools around here that we go against, we see at the state level. So if we can win in the MAC, we can win really in the state level there. So Minster always prepares us very well. You know, Versailles, I mean, there's just so many really, really good track programs around, and the girls and the boys push each other. The really nice thing about this year is we're going from three divisions to five, and that'll actually open up a lot more opportunities for our boys, because our boys have been Division II going against some rather large schools, and give some more opportunities for those boys that I know have a lot of talent, but it's just been hard when they go against schools twice our size.
Certainly, yeah, that's an inherent disadvantage no matter how hard you try, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, as you kind of look through that and how tough it is, you know, to run in the MAC, I imagine it also helps a lot, though, to have stiff competition. It pushes you to do better,
absolutely,
doesn't it?
Absolutely. And when we get in these bigger meets and we see a lot of our MAC competition, people just rise to the occasion. When we go against meets that just aren't very good, the times aren't very good, the distances, just because you're not being pushed. And you know, it's a very good, friendly rivalry that we have. I mean, we all want to win. We all want to do really, really well. But at the end of the day, somebody's got to win, and pushing each other to do that. And you're going to get your best times when somebody is pushing you. And Izzy certainly saw that. She set three state records at the state meet. She's got, like I said, tons of our own records, but in the 200, she ran a 23.04, which is unheard of. She set the state record there. In the 400, she ran a 52.89. Also claimed the long jump title. She was a 3-year state champ in that. Our 4x4 set the state record in that. And our girls have always been really good. We qualified all of our relays the last couple years for the state meet. But like you said, I mean, doing it around here against the local competition, against the talent that we have, is really what prepares us for that. And then the stage isn't so big when we go on to regionals and those sort of levels.
And also, you know, talking about how you develop that kind of talent. I know in some cases, let's face it, some of us naturally can run faster than others. Some of us are quite slow
when we
run. But I'm sure you can also explain that it's not just a matter of you're going to run and set those records because you can do it. I mean, there's some practice, training, right?
Sure, sure. And that's definitely a long process with a lot of our kids. I'm also a defensive coordinator on the football team, so I'm with those guys all the time. Right after our football season's done, I'll take about a week and jump into track right away. Constantly doing workouts and those sort of things. But yes, there is some God-given talent. There are some of those intangibles that you can have. But we've seen tremendous growth from a lot of our kids, whether that be distance, whether that be sprints. And there is a lot of work that goes into that. And that really is a testament to our community and our area and how hard people work.
And also, you know, as you talk about the discipline, the training, you know, for them also, I'm sure you encourage, you know, exercise, strength, conditioning, and as familiar refrain with all the coaches we talk to, if you're in athletics, you know, you're going to probably eat differently than your friends do.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, it takes a lot of dedication. You have to stretch on your own. For us, it's definitely a building process. Early in the year, we're not going to be great because we're kind of easing into it. Not that we're out of shape, it's just we're easing into it, and it is such a marathon of a season. So we try to build each week as we go. Like you said, you have to take time. I take at least one day a week that we are going to do yoga with as a team, especially with my sprinters. You know, distance has to continuously put in the miles. Our throwers are lifting in season a minimum of 2 days a week. And then off season, you know, I'm getting down there 3-4 days a week with all of our kids, and things come up, but the kids that are dedicated certainly see the most reward for the time that they put in.
And also, you know, as you mentioned, you are, you know, defensive coordinator, you know, for the football team. And, you know, for people that have never been on staff or, you know, or even played the game, explain that. You know, when you have somebody that is a coordinator, it's pretty much you're calling the shots.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
When the other team has the ball, right?
Right, right. And all you can do is be prepared and put those kids in the best position possible, and knowing our strengths and trying to put those kids in those positions. You know, it's been tremendous to learn from coaches like Chip Hott, and him and I have a great relationship. I've been his D coordinator for the last 13 years. And being able to go against him every single week during the week and kind of coaching against him, because he'll call the offense and then I'll call the defense, has really helped me sharpen my skills. And then the kids get used to that. It is like a game all the time for them, whether it be for football or whether we're in track and we're competing against that watch or our teammates or whatever it might be. So all of those things certainly pay off for us.
That does. That sounds like, you know, certainly a challenge, but also can be a lot of fun, mm-hmm, right?
Certainly.
You had said you played baseball when you went to school here. You know, for people that might be younger, that don't know, you know, remember the era, who did you play for?
I played for Bryan.
You played for Bryan.
Yeah.
So, you know, share with us, first of all, what position were you?
In
baseball.
In baseball, I was center fielder.
Center field, how about that? And, you know, what was it like to play for him? What did you get from him
that
you take to this day?
Certainly. Actually, I still have a bracelet with Coach Harlemert on my wrist even now. So Bryan was great. He, you know, kind of a lot of the things that he kind of taught about building those relationships and keeping in contact, I still use that as a coach now. Keeping in contact, I text Izzy Zahn as often as I can. I keep it in touch with kids that I've coached. There are kids that I've coached 20 years ago that I still keep in contact with. And that's really something that Bryan really brought, and I really took from him, because he was such a people person and really cared about you. And so I've always tried to kind of emulate that and really care about my former athletes. And it's not just what we do on the field or on the track or whatever it might be, that we build these lifelong relationships, and it's professional early, and then it turns it into more of a friendship as we get older.
Sure does. I'm sure over the years you probably have been invited to some weddings, and
sure,
you know, because they remember that bond, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
That mentorship, if you will.
Sure.
And I've always felt, if you play sports or you're in, you know, one of those activities, in a lot of ways, it kind of is an extension of the classroom, isn't it? You learn a lot about life.
Absolutely. Know? Absolutely. And then, you know, to some extent, it's almost like it can feel like a family situation. You know, we always put family first, whether that's in track, whether that's in football. And we always say, hey, if it's a family situation, you got to do what's best for your family. But then we are all kind of family members. We spend a lot of time together. We spend more time with our athletes, sometimes with our own family, and it becomes that family, and you care, and that's the best part about all of that. Those are the rewards. You know, the records and the wins and losses are fun, but you remember the relationships, really.
I'm sure you also work hard with the team that certainly you're glad if you win, not too happy if you don't win, but in the end, you don't take that into the next week, right?
Sure. You know, have that short memory, learn from it, and move on. I think I've realized over time that I more hate to lose than I like to win. Wins are fine, wins are great, but I mostly just absolutely hate to lose. So you take those losses, you know, as they are, but you got to learn from them and move on. But it's all part of life.
You know, and I think whoever you root for, particularly in baseball over a long season, your team could win the World Series, but you're going to remember that one darn game that got away. It just makes you mad, doesn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. You know, those little ones, those little losses are will hang with you. I think they hang with me longer as a coach than it ever did as a player.
Yeah, well, and I imagine that's part of, you know, how you have to kind of always better your best. This may have been good enough this week, but we have to get better. There's no resting on your laurels in your profession, right?
It's always a process, and you got to enjoy the process. If you like the process of getting better and competing, then to me that it doesn't feel like work anymore. It feels like it's fun.
Imagine it's rather gratifying for you, whether it's in track, whether it's in football, where you do see that one, you know, player, I mean, had a great meet, or you know, some kind of a play on defense, and you remember when they were just starting and they wouldn't have been able to do that back
then. And how far they've come. I mean, that really reminds me of like Kirsten Keller last year. She was the other senior that that we took to state, and you're not going to find her as an individual. She really actually last year, I think she only competed in one individual event, and I think that was one time. Other than that, she was a relay person, and she was that glue that we needed, and she went to state all 4 years. She was a tremendous person, but didn't get the individual accolades. You just need to be part of that group and keep with the process and helping other along, especially, you know, when you have that experience. Those girls or guys that have been through those tough times, they learn from it, and then they could pass that on to the younger ones.
You know, relay is such a compelling sport in the sense that you know, everybody, they're going to run as fast as they can, but they only have one part of the race. So
right.
They're literally handing it off. I always thought that was an interesting one.
Absolutely. You know? And whether you're in first and you're just trying to run away from the people that are chasing you, or whether you are getting the baton and you're trying to run down the ones that are in front, those are really, really exciting. The relays are really fun. Individuals are great, too, but the team aspect and putting those relays together really just kind of shows the grit. You have to have gritty people.
Share with us also the number of events you have in track for those who may have forgotten.
Sure. Yeah, we have it depends on the meet, but typically there are 17 different events that we go through, and whether that be field events, whether that be, you know, that's the best part about track that I like, and also having a bigger roster is there are so many events and we need so many different people. With all the different throws, with the jumps and all the field events, and then you have sprints, you have the kind of mid-distance, the 400s, 800s, and then you got the long distance, the 16s, 1600s, and the 3200s. It takes a lot of different types of people. It takes a lot of dedication. That's why I'm fortunate to be surrounded by other Coldwater grads, some that ran for me. Coming on here shortly will be Marty Shane here. He's the boys cross country coach. He's been with me from the beginning, and he's been tremendous for me to lean on and help me in so many different ways in the distance in particular. But Caleb Spencer, as a graduate from here, he threw for me and is now my throws coach. And Ava Gear and Carly Goodwin have been really, really huge assets for me, because then they have been able to take over some of those events that I don't have to worry about, because I know they're in good hands, and then I can focus on the whole team and they can worry about the individual events. And that's been tremendous, and being able to worry about the team as a whole.
That's for sure. And I know another thing I hear of people encouraging, you know, young athletes, play as many sports as you can, right? This is your time. You don't get to do this, you know, very much after high school.
Absolutely, absolutely. Coldwater's been, you know, very, very giving when it comes to sharing athletes and those sort of things. Having these kids do as many sports as possible. Like I said, I was a baseball player, and I encourage those guys, if you're not going to run track, then play baseball. Typically, it's the other way around. They want to play baseball, and then if they don't want to play baseball anymore, I'll take them on the track team. And some of my best athletes have come, they were with baseball, and then they turned around and came back to us. So having those, you know, obviously the success, the like just last year alone with volleyball winning, yeah, with track winning, baseball was right there, football we won, all of that just helps with each other. The interesting part in that I thought was all those girls that won the state track title, none of them were on the volleyball team. Volleyball team was kind of their own thing, and they did a tremendous job with that.
That's amazing. You know, before we wrap it up, Mark, I have to ask, I assume your favorite song's got to be Center Field by John Fogerty, right?
Absolutely.
Put me in, coach.
That's right. I'd love that. Put me in.
That right. Hey, thanks for coming.
I appreciate that.
I also want to thank Rage Refrigeration, Mix Sports, and Ernst Apparel. Thank you to Playmore Lanes and Adventure Golf, along with Loudix Jewelry. We'll continue back to school after these messages on 96.7 The Wave. This is Back to School at Coldwater, and we are here. We're in the cafeteria, which I'm sure you can tell from what's going on in the background here. I want to again thank TNT Auto, Schwederman Construction, Rich Plumbing, and Enyart's Interior Touch. Mark Shane here is here, and we have the cross-country team, also sixth grade math and assistant track coach. And Marty, is there anything you don't do? There's quite a list here.
I like to do a lot of variety of things, and it's a lot of fun, especially with coaching and teaching at the same time.
I was going to say, you typically a lot of staff members, they wear plenty of hats here, don't
right,
they?
Right, yeah, and that's the great thing about Coldwater Schools is we're willing to go above and beyond and step out of our comfort zone a little bit and do things that, you know, that maybe some other schools don't. Teachers are willing to step up and coach and do those things.
For you, your own background, where you're from originally, and what got you into the education field?
So I'm originally from Coldwater, graduated in 04, and just wanted to basically through my job when I was in high school, I found out that I love working with kids and realized that teaching was probably that profession I wanted to go into, along with coaching aspect. I knew that was always going to be there as well with the teaching. So it kind of was just a combination of both of those ideas that I wanted to coach, wanted to teach, and got into that with that. Went to Ohio State, loved working with the kids there through my observations, those things, and then I was lucky enough to come back to my home school and get a teaching job here.
Sure. Also, along that way, many of your former teachers became colleagues, didn't they?
They did. And that was a little, weird, I guess, a little bit, or kind of just I wasn't prepared for that, I guess, when some of my colleagues that were my teachers, those conversations were just awkward at first and mm-hmm. whatever else. But through the years, I've just come to realize that, you know, they're just normal people like me, and they're willing to do whatever they need to do to help me out.
Then they want you to call them by their first name, and you just can't, right?
Right, right. And some of them I still don't, but some of them I do, and they're okay with it.
So. And I think they understand that that's about respect.
Right, it is.
And you know, teaching sixth grade math, now that sounds like that would be a lot of fun, because you're getting them when they've got a lot of foundational skills already, and maybe they're getting ready to make that transition into some of the more difficult math.
Right, and that is, sixth grade math is actually a little bit of a change from what they did from third through fifth grade. So new concepts, new terminology, and it is a huge step for them, a huge sometimes difficult area for them, but like I said, it's a good thing that they're getting that information, getting that knowledge.
What are some of the new things you get into in sixth grade math?
So we start talking about ratios and proportions a little bit. We start talking more into volume, but then taking figures and combining them together to make them look like, let's say, a house or whatever else in there, and they have to find the volume of those things. So it's just taking those concepts, those things that they already know, possess, and trying to enhance them and grow on them, but then also adding in those new elements of the ratio, proportions, and those.
And I'm sure with a lot of them, you're patient, you work with them. I bet in the beginning they probably give you that look like, I'm never going to figure this out.
Well, last year I was actually a fifth grade teacher, so this year the students already knew me coming in.
That's a plus.
So it was. And it's not at the same time because they were comfortable with me already. And usually at first, you know, they're trying to feel you out a little bit, but this year the students already knew who I was. So we kind of started off as just like a normal, or how we ended last year. With them being comfortable and all that, but you know, usually at first they're quiet, they want to work, they want to do those things, and they still do, but to a point now they know that I'm comfortable with them, like having a conversation and interacting with them during class, and it's not all about strictly just math. It's also the concepts of getting to know them and developing those relationships with them.
All right, now in your capacity as cross country coach, you know, we just talked about track, and that's for people that don't mind kind of running in a circle.
Right.
Your runners tend to run, and where they stop, nobody knows, because cross country tracks are they're very different.
Right.
It's like a video game. You don't know. It could be hilly. It could be rocky. There could be a brook you'd have to jump over. So
right.
It's a very different experience.
It is, and one of the things that I tell the athletes when we get to a meet is you need to go see the course. You need to understand what the expectations are on the course, what they're going to experience there. So immediately, as soon as my guys get to the cross-country course, they're walking it, they're jogging on it, they're doing the things that they need to do to make sure that they're comfortable with where they need to go and at what time they need to go where.
Yeah, very important. And for some people, I'm sure they like the consistency. For others, I bet they like the challenge of a different course, right?
And usually when I talk to my cross-country guys about going out for track, they said, I don't want to run in a circle. I don't like doing that. Where they like the cross-country aspect because it's not the same over and over and over again. And I always tell them, you know, track helps build your competitiveness towards cross-country, and you should do both. Ultimately, but like I said, a lot of my track cross-country guys don't do track necessarily because of the fact that they just don't like going in that oval.
Understandable, and certainly nothing wrong with either way. It's just a matter of what you prefer, right?
And exactly, and I always tell them, though, like, you know, you're working with me, so it would be a benefit if you would go out because that would be helping you get better prepared for your cross-country season.
Yep, there you have it. When you grew up, were you a runner yourself?
I was. So I ran cross-country and track here. Those were the two sports I focused on in high school. Like I said, I love both equally, pretty much. So it's not like I prefer one or the other, but like it just, it made sense that when I came back, I wanted to coach those sports.
And do you still run to this day?
A little bit. Not a whole lot, like we used to, but a little bit.
Yeah.
So I make sure that they're doing the running, and I'm sitting there watching them do the running.
I would think you also talk to them about, you know, that your body is your instrument. That's your baseball bat. That's your, you know, that you must take care of it. And you talk about stretching and what have you, because I think we've all been there when we try to run and then maybe it's a little hot out or we didn't stretch right, and then you get those cramps and you know why, right?
Right, right. And I try to help them through that process. We have a trainer here that's really good, Tiff. Does an excellent job if there's anything, any lingering injuries, but I try to do work with the cross-country athletes to make sure that we're not going to see her as much as what we need to.
Yeah, that's a good point, right?
Maybe,
and sometimes I'm sure you can do everything right and still get hurt. I mean, things can just happen.
100%.
Right?
And with cross-country, you don't have that sure footing when you're landing on the grass. So sometimes you hit a divot or whatever and twist an ankle. And most of the time when that happens, I always tell the athletes, you know, you're maybe out a few days. Just keep it moving, keep the blood flow to it, and make sure that we're getting that healing process.
And that's when the people that run in circles remind you there's no divots on their
track. Right, and I always tell them, too. I tell my cross-country guys that. I'm like, well, the track, you have the sure footing. So sometimes we do workouts on the track just because I want to work on that speed element more so than what I do the cross-country element. So when we do that, I said, hey, you got sure footing. You don't have to worry about that. Now we just go and focus on the speed element with the workout.
Excellent. The other thing, obviously, is you do cross-country team, but also assistant track coach.
Yes.
So, I mean, you kind of have your feet in both of those. I'm sure you've had quite a few athletes that you had them maybe from another sport, right?
Right, and we try to work as much as possible with them to make them feel comfortable with doing the other sports outside of just cross-country or track.
And you know, outside of school, as you mentioned, you know, teachers are people, too. Do you have a family yourself?
I do. I have three kids that go here and love doing them. I actually have my daughter in my classroom right now, helping her with sixth grade math. So It's neat to see them and in a different environment than just with the family. And a lot of fun to see them. I just saw my daughter here at lunch right now, gave her a big hug and smile, and she constantly wanted to keep talking to me, and I told her I had to come over here to get interviews.
So. They'd be on the radio, right?
Right.
You know, another thing, too, it's funny. Some kids, I'm sure, would think, lucky your dad's the teacher. Understand that no. It may be nice, but the reality is that as you expect a lot from your kids and you expect success, you're really going to expect it from her, right?
Right. And like I said, she knows that too. And so does my son. There was an incident a couple years back that I got a phone call from a teacher. I went immediately down to that teacher and said, hey, you know, what are you doing? Knock it off, those types of things. And I always make them aware that expectations here are probably even higher than what they are at home, just because I want you to treat others with respect more so than, not that I don't want them to treat me with respect, but they're my kid and I understand that they're going to every now and then have those problems or whatever with me and kind of lash out a little bit at me. But like I said, with other people, they can't do that. Yeah.
And that's another thing too, that what you learn. Mr. Mader talked about this, that you're here at the school, you're trying to turn out well-rounded citizens. I mean, it's not just about your grades, right?
Oh, 100%. You know, and like I said, it's instilling that respect in not just my kids, but all the kids, making sure that we're doing the proper things. Every Monday, about every other week, I should say, on Mondays, I do this character talk with the kids, and I do a Dr. Seuss quote with them, and it's all about just being good people, being good citizens, making sure they're making the right choices. And they're definitely during those 3 to 5 minutes that we're talking about that, listening and taking it all in, and hopefully I'm instilling that aspect in them.
And I think it feels good to earn. And what I mean by that is, you know, you might have some students that are math whizzes, good for them. But for those that struggled and maybe they had a hard time the early part of the year, when you get to the end of the year and now they're getting great scores on their tests and they've learned, they're doing better, got to be some satisfaction in that on both sides.
Right, and 100%. And realize that it's, you know, that state test at the end, it's important, but it's not the most important thing that's here. It's instilling those good qualities in those people and making sure that they're going to become good citizens in the future.
That's what it's about. All right. Well, we're glad to talk with a former student who became a good citizen, became a teacher.
Yep,
and that
you.
Is Marty Shanehar, our guest. We're going to take a break. Lori Ramel will be here, Family and Consumer Science and FCCLA, and we'll talk about that next. I again want to thank Loudix Jewelry, along with Claymore Lanes and Adventure Golf, and your Interior Touch. Thank you to Ridge Plumbing and to Schwederman Construction. We'll be back on 96.7 The Wave. It's back to school at Coldwater. Thank you to Ray's Refrigeration and Mixed Sports, along with Ernst Apparel, Claymore Lanes and Adventure Golf. Also, Loudix Jewelry and TNT Auto. Lori Ramel with us now for Family and Consumer Sciences and also the FCCLA organization. Lori, nice to see you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So if you would kindly share with us, you know, how long you've been at Coldwater and where did you grow up? What got you into education?
I went to school at St. Henry, not too far from here. I enjoyed being a student and learning, and I wanted to pass that on to others and help them to learn. I guess I was inspired maybe by my high school family and consumer science teacher. She, as I got to be a senior, she let me help out with some of the classes with the younger ages. I went on and got my bachelor's degree from Bowling Green State University, master's from Wright State. I started my teaching career at St. Mary City Schools, taught there for 12 years, and I've been here at Coldwater for 22 years.
All right, excellent. And what's kind of neat about that is I'm sure the time has flown by, hasn't it?
It certainly has, yes.
And so, you know, with the courses and what you teach, you know, your students, you know, when you get into middle school, you get into some really good stuff here, you know, in particular, life skills and guidance, career. In other words, I mean, all subjects here are important, but it sounds like you're teaching some really important, practical, every day you're going to do this the rest of your life skills, right?
Correct, yes. That at our middle school level, our courses are called life skills, and we focus in on, I do things with the students on food prep and nutrition, as well as we do a little sewing unit. And with both of those topics, I like to think we're working on employability skills. As they're in the lab setting doing the hands-on projects, they're working on initiative, time management, problem solving, and, you know, just things that we need in our workforce. I also help or co-teach with the middle school guidance counselor with the 7th and 8th graders, and we do quite a bit of work with some career assessments. The 8th grade classes do an actual career shadow, just trying to look into what their interests are, maybe figuring it out or maybe eliminating some things along the way, but it's a good experience for them to just start thinking, especially as they get ready to enter high school. And they're going to be able to start maybe zeroing in on some elective classes and, you know, pursuing some of those interests, a part-time job and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and some of the things you teach, I mean, food prep, how important that is. And, yes, that absolutely pertains to the boys. You can cook, too. And, you know, as it's food prep, I'm sure a lot of it also has to do with, you know, with food planning and explaining to them that, you know, you can cook for yourself. Maybe your parents are working. Maybe you can make dinner for them sometime. But you have to know, you know, how to do that. And not just that, but also nutrition, where you kind of explain to them that, you know, certain frozen foods may taste pretty good, but you can do better, you know?
Right. Yeah, and just, you know, getting them to understand the simple, the basics that go behind each class. You know, we start with the 7th and 8th graders getting some of the basic skills. So hopefully then as they get to high school, and at that level, they're choosing whether or not they're taking the class. It's considered an elective. But with all of the different food-based classes I teach, every class makes different types of foods. And, you know, I just try to reinforce different skills, trying to build on what they already know each year.
That's great, and that's a neat thing, too, especially when you get into guidance like career research and shadow. It's obviously understandable for, you know, a younger student. Like, we've got some kind of elementary kids in lunch right now, and you ask them what they would want to do for a living, and maybe they've been watching TV, so they have a job that they want to do. But at that age, you probably don't actually, you haven't done the research on what the career is like. You probably haven't shadowed anyone yet, so you don't really know, is this really what you want to do, right?
Right. And then, again, I had mentioned we do the career shadow with the 8th graders. I also teach financial literacy. Corey Klinke and I both teach financial literacy here at the high school. He has a few sections. I have a few sections. And within that year-long course, we both incorporate some career exploration. All of the students will get their Ohio Means Jobs readiness seal that has them looking at these 15 essential skills that have been outlined as necessary for employers. We also do a career shadow again at that level. Students who take financial literacy, which is a required course for them, can take it as a sophomore, junior, or a senior. And then they get to, again, go out and do another shadow. We up the requirements a little bit because they're a little bit older. Again, it's just a good experience to be able to go out there and see. You don't want to think it's what you want to do, and then you go and pay for all that education or put that time into it, and then you realize it wasn't what you thought. So it gives the opportunity to learn about it.
And some of these things you teach, you know, the financial literacy, which includes budget, income, expenses, credit, major purchases, insurance. Dare I say, probably some adults could benefit from your class, right? Let's face it.
Yes. You know, some of the time, you just mentioned insurance. That's one that we all, even as adults, you know, you get a little bit better at it when you have to use it, but you sure hope you don't have to use it. So, you know, I you know, let the students know that, you know, right now it might seem so far away for you, but at some point this is stuff that you're really going to need to know. It's going to have, you know, it's going to be a part of your life in the future. So at least take away from you the basic information and know enough to ask the questions that you need to get the answers when you're in that moment.
You even teach child development, right? Birth all the way up to preschool. That, another great thing to learn, really.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, just to have that background. On the first day of that semester class, I always kind of preface it. You know, this isn't just for people who are planning on being a parent or not. We all live in a world with other people, and it just helps us to understand others and how we become who we are and how we can interact with each other. And yes, we do, you know, specific information. We do everything from, or talk about everything from readiness to be a parent, what goes into that, the responsibilities, the cost, up through prenatal development, and then after the baby's born, looking at social, emotional, physical development and intellectual development of the child through the preschool years.
Yeah, pretty neat to learn about.
Absolutely,
for them,
yes.
Sure.
Yes.
And also, you know, some of the other things you get into, like with the FCC, you know, LA organization, service. You know, like you work with a wonderful project, the Angel Tree Project that our home does, and you work with them, I understand.
Yes, we do. We at the middle school level, we do the Angel Tree Project, where the students will group up with some of their friends that are also members, and then they become responsible for the Christmas for an individual. So they maybe go shopping together and pick out their items, bring them in wrapped for the family to pick up. At the high school level, we will actually adopt an entire family. So we will take care of all of the children within the family, and they'll do some fundraisers along the way. They've done something called Donation Donut, where we have muffins and homemade cinnamon rolls and just different breakfast kinds of things. And students, as they walk in the door before school, buy that. And then all that money goes towards our Adopt-A-Family project.
Very, very nice. And, you know, some of the other things that you learn, like, for example, with the high school, the cookie sales, or the importance of that, of teaching them, you know, kind of go door to door, do your networking, make these sales. You learn how to approach people, right? Talk to them, take care of them, deliver their orders when they come in, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot to learn there too, right?
Right, yeah. And I use that word networking with my financial literacy class this week as they are getting ready to go out and ask their mentors to complete their Ohio Means Jobs readiness seal forms. And I was like, these people you're asking, you're building a network so that as you want to enter the workforce, maybe in a specific career, or you're applying for a scholarship or applying to get into a program, or you need so many observation hours or an internship, these are people that you can go back to, that you've built a solid relationship with to help you reach your goals as you go on in your future.
All right. And some of the things that you cover that's really neat, too, is global foods. You know, sometimes, you know, culture and cuisine, you can look up a lot of stuff, but it may be different when you actually learn about it, maybe even try some examples.
Right. And, you know, we live in such a global world that we, you know, we can, people travel and we see things. In the world of work, we are, you know, working with people from different countries. And so to have a little bit of an appreciation or a background in how other cultures and traditions are celebrated, and we try to incorporate that in with the global foods. They learn about the food, and then we also learn about the culture and traditions along with that.
I'll tell you what, in Great Britain, what they call breakfast is a lot different than what we usually have.
Yes.
And you also even teach them, and this is also neat too, interior, you know, design. When you get your first home, obviously if you rent an apartment for the first time, not much you can do there. It's not your place. But when you get your first home and, you know, and it's you got a good deal on it, you walk in there and it's straight out of the 1970s, you want to bring it up to date. That's a thing, isn't it?
Right,
you
got to
know.
Well, yeah, and this, you know, here, as we mentioned earlier, you know, these are all classes that you can apply to your life, no matter who you are, no matter what career you choose to pursue, you know, just to be able to know the things that can help us live and become the person that we want to become. You know, interior design is something that, yeah, we can use on a personal level, but it's also something that we can use on a career level. Whether people are doing graphic design or interior design, you know, they in that class get some of the backgrounds with the elements and principles of design to help that they could apply in any area of design.
I would think after all these years, too, there are some students you hear from that keep in touch that to let you know that they got a lot out of this. These are some great subjects right
yeah.
here.
Yeah, and you know, it's always interesting, the comments. It's always like, oh, you remember that? But yeah, I as I run into students in the community and stuff, they will reflect on some things that they had done in class.
No question. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming. Lori, it's so good to see you, and we should wish you, you know, continued success with both FCS and FCCLA. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
And it is back to school in Coldwater. Actually, they've been back for some time. They've been back, and they're eating lunch. We want to thank Ray's Refrigeration, along with Nick Sports and Ernst Apparel, Playmore Lanes and Adventure Golf and Lalix Jewelry. I'm going to switch gears and talk girls soccer with Coach Paul Dinkeldine. Good to see you, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about you for a moment here. Tell us where you came from and how you got into education, particularly soccer.
Well, the education part of it, I was not a teacher or anything. I was a letter carrier in Salina for 30 years, but grew up in St. Mary's. We lived in Salina, and I've been coaching for now for probably 20-plus years. And so I got into it when my kids were little, and followed them on through, and then decided to try to get into the high school, and coached in St. Mary's for 12, and then moved on, and I've been here in Coldwater for 5 now.
All right, so if you would kind of talk with us a bit about that sport of girls soccer, you know, how long your season is, and when do you start practicing?
Okay, our official start date is always August 1st for the season. And then we have now they've upped it to a 17-game regular season schedule. It used to be 16. They added a game for us. And we're done with our regular season, and we're in the tournament now.
All right, and if you would share with us, too, how things are going with that.
Things are going really good. We just had our first tournament game Tuesday night, and we won that one. So we're in the district semifinal next Monday against Delta St. John's. And so right now we are 12-3-2 in the season.
Excellent, excellent. You know, this is, you know, especially, you know, being in tournament. If you could talk with us, too, when does practice start for the year? And in general, how much practice is needed before you get proficient?
Well, most schools have stuff going on all summer long in any sport. But in girls soccer, we're in a summer league, and then we have what we call kick-arounds, that whoever shows up, none of this is mandatory. Whoever shows up for a kick-around, we practice, do some drills, and just try to get them soccer ready for the season.
Excellent. You know, the other thing, too, people that haven't played forever or, you know, never really did play, and how many players do you have on the field at one time now?
You start 11 players on the field for soccer, just like in football.
Okay.
There's 11 starters, and then you sub in as needed.
As needed. And also the timing of the game. How long is a game?
Varsity games go for 40-minute halves, 80-minute games. JV games go 36-minute halves. And so last 2 years, we've actually had a JV team, and some schools have them, some don't. So we might play one half of a JV game or sometimes full games.
And also, with that clock, I mean, does it stop or is it continuous? I know soccer's a little different in that regard, yeah?
Yes, we don't get any timeouts in soccer. And the clock runs unless there's a goal scored or there's an injury on the field. They'll stop it for an injury, you know, to get the trainer out there or the coaches to assist the player. And but other than that, it's a running clock. Except for after goals.
How about also, you know, something that people might not know, that sometimes, you know, when that ball goes out of bounds, sometimes they throw it in. Other times they kick it in. Same thing with the goalie, that sometimes they throw the ball. Other times they drop kick it. Sometimes they kind of do like a kickoff kind of thing. How is that all determined?
Well, anything that goes out the sidelines is considered out of bounds, and you do a throw-in on those type of things. Anything that goes out the ends of the field, on the end lines, they call it, then the goalie or a defender or whoever will take a set free kick. If a goalie stops a shot on goal or picks up a ball, then she's allowed to punt it. So, there's punts, or she can throw it also. If that's her choice. She can throw it or punt it. But for the most part, throw-ins or anything that goes out the sides and anything that goes out the end is a goal kick.
And how about also, what are the circumstances upon which you'd have a corner kick?
Okay, that's if the defending team kicks it out of the end on their end of the field. Only on the end lines. If they kick it out the side, it's a throw in. If they kick it out the end, the opposing team gets a corner kick.
In other words, don't do that because exactly. Those are hard to defend, right?
It's the most dangerous play in soccer as far as the corner.
How many
kicks.
Highlights have we seen over the years of a corner kick that somebody knocks the ball in with their head, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Headers are a very lethal weapon on corner kicks and stuff. And actually, the past couple of years, we've had. I'm going to drop a name here, Grace Hewer, who does practically all our corner kicks, but she has such a strong foot that she's able to get it to the, into the box or whatever. And we've had headers where she scored off of her own corner kick in the past.
Amazing. And also, here's something, too. A goalie, like if they have a leg, I mean, they can kick that ball. What a weapon that is, right? What a quick way to get the ball out of your end.
Right. Sid Greasep's been our goalie for the last 4 years. She's been a starter for the last 4 years. And over those 4 years, she has grown so much in her ability to play that position. And, yes, her punting last year, I believe it was in the summer of last year, we took her over to meet with a goalkeeper from college and stuff, and he changed her punting, and her punts are, they're getting to midfield now or farther. So yes, it's definitely a lethal weapon if a goalie can punt the ball.
Another thing also is I've always thought of soccer as a game of patience. In other words, it's not unusual that you might see a scoreless tie or somebody wins 1-0. I mean, it's hard to score, isn't it?
It's very hard to score because that goalkeeper is standing, a lot of times she's standing in a 24-foot wide area and stuff, and usually your better players are playing goalie, and so, their quickness and their ability to stop the ball makes them 1-0 or 0-0 games. A lot of people complain about ties or 1-0, what a boring game it is, but we only get 1 point for a goal, whereas in football you get 6 points for a touchdown. So, if you did it that way, you could look at it as a 7-0 or 6-0 game instead of a 1-0 game.
That's very true. And sometimes, it just depends on who's watching. Some of us like defense. The only other game I can compare it to might be hockey because there's a goal. And I will take a 2-1 game or 3-2 game over 8-6 because that just gets sloppy after a while. I was like, can we have some defense, please, right?
Exactly, yeah. Soccer and hockey are very comparable in the way, defense, because you have offsides in both sports. And, it's a very physical game. Both are physical, and we don't wear any pads other than shin guards. So, boys and girls, they get banged around out there.
That's for sure. And, your goalie, talk about also an advantage. Everybody out, they got to kick that ball. Your goalie can do anything they want, right? They got hands, head, anything.
Exactly, yeah. For the most part, yeah, the keeper's the only one on the field that can use her hands, within inside the lines of the field and stuff like that. So she's an important factor, and girls on the field have to remember that they can't use their hands, because a lot of times your instincts you'll go to block a ball that's coming at your face or at your head or something like that, and you use your hand, it's a free kick for the other team.
That's right, that it is. Another thing also with, you know, soccer, I mean, it's very much the world's game. I mean, when we get outside of the United States, that is the national sport. I mean, gosh, they have pro leagues, you know, in England that are just incredibly elite. They love the game in South America, throughout, you know, Europe, et cetera. I mean, it's a wonderful game. It may not quite be in the United States as what it is overseas, but it's getting there, it seems.
Right. Yeah, it's... Soccer is a worldwide game, and overseas, if you've been watching the NFL here lately, they've been playing a game overseas every Sunday for the past couple of weeks and stuff, and they're playing in soccer stadiums.
That's right.
And those stadiums are huge, and those people fill those stadiums for all their soccer games and stuff like that. It's a passion for those people because they don't have professional football as the United States has it.
That's for sure. And I don't know about you. I kind of dig a little breakfast with football. 9 o'clock kickoff or whatever. I can run with that, you know?
It's evidently become very popular because yes. The NFL has been doing it. College actually has been sending college teams over there this year, played a couple overseas.
England, Ireland, and Germany is what I've seen. And, of course, I don't want to leave out Brazil. They've been playing in South America even.
Right, so. Yeah, matter of fact, they went down there and played, and there's plans on more football games going down there.
Yeah, it's everybody wins. People in those countries love seeing some sports. Fans get a kick out of traveling, those who do.
Right.
Sometimes the players and coaches grumble a little, but in the end, they seem to have a good time also.
Well, they grumble because of the travel time, the preparation time, and stuff like that. It's tough for them, especially if they have a Sunday football game, and then they got to travel overseas and get ready for another Sunday morning game. It makes it kind of tough.
That it does. I'll tell you what, though, I thank you very much, you know, for coming on, Paul. It was hard to just nail down one thing to talk about. I mean, it would have been fun to hear what it would have been like to be a letter carrier all those years and how it was different back then, you know, than now.
It was very different. Summertime, it was fun. Wintertime, it was nobody wanted your job in the wintertime.
No, I bet not. And also a few dogs you haven't forgotten to this day, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah. There's I've lots of memories on dog bites.
And not to mention you got your steps in.
Yep. Exactly. But I didn't have a something that would measure my steps every day like that. It's very, very helpful now that I wear one every day.
Yeah, and listen, when they say through rain and no snore, no sleep, they're not kidding. You deliver it at all times.
Exactly. Blizzards. We went out in blizzards before because back in the day, people wanted their mail. Now it's really backed off.
That's for sure. Yeah, well, I think once you grow up, you know, you realize what's usually in there is bills.
Yes. So,
it's not so exciting anymore.
Not anymore.
Thanks, Paul. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's back to school here in Coldwater, courtesy of TNT Auto, along with Ray's Refrigeration, Mix Sports and Ernst Apparel, Playmore Lanes, and Adventure Golf. Very happy to welcome Karen Wending to the trip, to the show, who does the D.C. trip. Karen, good to see you.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Hey, let's hear about you a little bit, where you're from originally, and how long you've been doing D.C. trips.
I am originally from Fort Recovery, but I've been living in Coldwater for over 30 years. This is my 30th year teaching at Coldwater, and about my 11th year in charge of the Washington, D.C. trip.
And what do you teach here?
I teach 8th grade math and 8th grade Algebra 1.
All right. And, you know, when you do this D.C. trip, I think the first question to ask is, how has it changed over the years for you?
The biggest change, we no longer drive through the night. So we used to leave on Sunday night. We'd drive through the night and go to Gettysburg. Then we would drive into D.C. We would tour D.C. Then Thursday evening, we would head back home and drive through the night. About 3 years ago, we stopped doing that. So we now leave on Monday morning. And unfortunately, we don't get to stop at Gettysburg. We drive straight to D.C. We tour. And then we head back home Thursday afternoon. And we're home late Thursday night.
All right. And, you know, for parents, and we remember this, too, whether it's late or early, there's always some fairly ungodly hours you're getting up anyways, right? No matter how you slice it.
Right. Traffic can be a little crazy in D.C., so there's been years when we get home 2 hours behind schedule just because we have one wrong exit and traffic is very difficult to get around and turn around. So, yes, everything is just... It's a very fluid itinerary when you're going on a D.C. trip.
And we remind people, too, you know, the benefit of taking kids to see Washington, D.C., and how fortunate that they are. I know for school districts that maybe either are a little farther away from the nation's capital or whatever circumstances may be, that not everybody gets to do this.
Right. We live in such a great location. It's about an 8-hour drive to get to D.C., so our students can get there fairly quickly. The D.C. trip really increases the patriotism of our students when you're in that city and just hearing about George Washington, hearing about Abraham Lincoln, and then, you know, going to those memorials. It's just amazing. And I think one of the favorites is Arlington National Cemetery. And, you know, we spend a lot of time there. We talk about everything that the military has done for us. And the saying that we will try to give to the kids is, are you living your life so that it was worth theirs? And we look at all those graves. And once again, you know, they will say, are you living your life to make it worth theirs?
Excellent. And certainly inspiring. I think the advantage of, when you take people to see something, you can probably read about this all you want. You can watch some videos. I don't think anything replaces the experience of actually being somewhere.
Right. And my fellow eighth grade teachers, Aaron Weigel and Carrie Collig and Amber Deuce, do a fantastic job of getting the students ready for the trip. In the social studies classes, they're learning about all the memorials. They're learning about the museums that we're going to see. In language arts class, they're getting poems ready for the Vietnam Wall. They are reading a memoir called Night, all about the Holocaust, and it's really getting the kids ready. But when you go to that Holocaust museum, it brings that book they read to life. And they can learn so much and see so much online about the FDR Memorial. But when you walk through the FDR Memorial, it's just a totally different experience that you cannot get in the classroom. You need to be there to experience it.
And not only that, but throughout the years, and I know this is something you can't control because it's about timing, but I'm sure they've gotten some visits where some Ohio congressman or even senator will come out and talk to them if they happen to be around when a Mercer County trip is there, right?
Yes. It's been, it was a couple years ago when Warren Davidson was the representative for our district. He no longer is. Bob Latta is. But Warren Davidson met with us on the steps of the Capitol, and that was a special time for the kids. It doesn't always work for them to meet up with us, but when they do, we try to make that happen.
You know, and I'm sure for the congressperson, means a lot to them, too. They're politicking all day and how frustrating and down and dirty that can be. But here's a moment where you get to come out and talk to some kids and forget all that, right?
Right. It's always nice to take some questions from the kids. Some of those questions can be rather surprising because you never know what they're going to ask. But it's they enjoy it. The politicians, you know, they enjoy seeing some people back from Ohio.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. You know, like they came to you this time. So
right.
And some other things you don't plan. I know that, you know, my own kids have told me that they got to see the presidential limo drive by, you know.
Yes, we've seen that a few times. Another thing that's really special is when you're in Arlington National Cemetery and you see a caisson go past. So a funeral parade. Not every time do we see that, but Arlington National Cemetery has about 30 funerals a day. Oftentimes those funerals are in the newer part of the cemetery where we will tour the older part of the cemetery and then the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. But it's just really special when you're in the cemetery and you can hear the horse hooves clopping in the distance, and then you can hear taps in the distance. And every once in a while, we will see the procession go past us. And when you see the horse drawn carriage and you see that flag draped casket go past you, it gives you goosebumps.
You understand that person's there for a reason. And certainly when you look at some of the names. There's names of people that you're going to know that were, because of what they did, they were rather notable. Like Colin Powell, for example, and others come to mind.
Right. We walk through the cemetery, and we're always looking for names and thinking about the family, not just the name, but the family that goes with that name and what that family sacrificed.
That's for sure. As it is, I know you kind of encourage them, you know, put your phone down and live, right? But also, I'm sure they get some pictures and things to share with their own family.
Yes, and, with today's technology and the phones, I mean, yes, the kids are always sending information back, and we're always in contact with the parents back home, giving them information.
Yeah, it's certainly fun. And for you, you've been there a lot of times. I just have a feeling it never gets old, does it?
It never does. There's always something new. The museums are so big. There's always a new exhibit to see. There's always another quote to read. It's just a beautiful city.
It's interesting also when you think about the people that have come and gone out of that city. You know, you reference like FDR. I was thinking about Truman and Reagan and some others, you know, that were there, and now you're there, you know?
Right. I always tell the kids when we are at Mount Vernon, and we go through the mansion at Mount Vernon, and we're in the foyer of the house, and we walk upstairs, and it is the original handrail. It's the original handrail that, you know, George Washington himself held onto that railing as he was going up those steps. Thomas Jefferson visited, you know, he's holding that handrail. We are holding that exact same handrail that George Washington and others were using walking up the steps of the mansion at Mount Vernon. So the trip is, it's just a very special time for the kids.
The guys who decided that they had enough of England and her taxes, the guys that are the reason we have a United States, right?
Right. It's really neat to be there, knowing that all the people that have been there prior to us, just, you know, from the Lincoln to the Washington to the FDR, it's one thing after another that you're always seeing and experiencing when you're on that trip.
That is for sure. And you know where some decisions were made, right? As we were in World War II, you're in the place where the hard decisions had to be made, right? That may have been the difference between whether we won or lost.
Right, when you're standing on the steps of the Capitol and you just think of what's going on the other side of those doors, it can be a wow moment for a lot of the kids.
All right, so again, a lot of fun. I'm sure also in that time you've had some siblings come through, like, oh yeah, I took your older brother or sister to D.C. Now you get them, right?
Right, and it's also our tour guides. Tammy Barger is our head tour guide from Salina, and Tammy's been doing this for 30-some years. And some of our parent chaperones remember back to their eighth-grade trip, and Tammy Barger was their tour guide. So that's always a special time to have, you know, we have that second generation with the tour guides going to D.C. I think it's a great tradition that the schools in this area have, that we take our eighth graders to Washington, D.C.
It is, and if you've been going as long as you have or Tammy has, the other thing is for those kids, it's their first time there. They're probably a little overwhelmed. There's a lot to take in, and they have some experienced guides that are helping them to see the things they need to see and not miss anything.
Right, because there is so much to see. We always tell the kids, if you're going to go into the American History Museum, you really need to see the flag. It's the flag that the original flag that the Star Spangled Banner was written on. You know, the flag in the American History Museum. You have to see it. That's one of the exhibits to make sure you go to, because you would miss it. You might go down a different hallway and you wouldn't know.
Right.
So we tell the kids, you know, make sure you go see those things.
Yeah, or you might think, oh, it's an old flag. How nice.
Right.
No, it's not just another old flag. There's a lot of those that survive.
This is a special flag.
The flag.
Yes, this is a special flag.
Now, Declaration of Independence, is that there also?
No, the Declaration of Independence is in the National Archives.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Unfortunately, with the government shut down, the National Archives is currently closed.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to see a lot of things next week. We do have some setbacks. The National Archives is one. The Smithsonian's is another one, but there are a lot of things that are still going to be open. We're going to be able to go to Arlington National Cemetery. We're going to be able to go to all the outdoor memorials. So it's still going to be a fun trip.
I would say let's hope they get this resolved, but I don't see that happening by next week. I'm sorry. I wish it would.
But. My contact in D.C. is telling me the same. So we are making adjustments every day of how we're going to reschedule things to make it still a really good trip for the students.
And I'm sure you will.
Yes.
Thanks, Aaron. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, this is Back to School at Coldwater in the cafeteria, where it's a lot quieter now. I'm not used to this. I want to thank our sponsors, including Lodex Jewelry, Cal Pharmacy, Hogan Camp Funeral Home, and Enyart's Interior Touch. I got Mike Etzler here. He does volleyball, also elementary school, right?
Yep.
Principal. And
that's correct.
So if you would talk with us briefly, I know you got a couple of your players here with you today, all right?
Yeah, so we have Mia Kanapke and Kira Kanapke with us. They're our two seniors. And so they've had a big role this year leading our team because we're kind of youthful. So they've really had to step up to the plate and lead. So that's why we have them on here.
All right. So do we have Mia first?
Kira.
Kira. Okay. Kira, first of all, thanks for coming by. How long have you been playing volleyball?
I've been playing volleyball since fifth grade, so pretty long time.
And what got you into the sport to begin with?
I started out as a manager, just like picking up the balls and filling up the waters for like the varsity team when I was in elementary school. So that's just kind of how I got into it.
All right. And and for you, once you really did get into it, have you found it to be a lot of fun?
Yes, very.
What are some of your memories of from over the years of playing and places you've gotten to go?
Yeah. So in the preseason, we go to a tournament in Toledo. It's called the Super 20 Tournament. And that's just really fun. We get to stay in a hotel with the whole team, and it's great competition, and it just gets our season ready and just kind of shows like what we're going to look like that season and just kind of builds team chemistry, and it's just a really fun tournament. So I would say that's just one of my favorite memories.
That sounds like a really good way to get a season going. Now, what's your position in volleyball?
Outside and right side hitter.
Okay. What is it about that position that people should know, and what drew you to it?
It's just basically like the outlet to just the offense, and the pin hitter is just like kind of crucial to the offense as well as the middle, but yeah, just the outlet.
Yeah. And for you, what are your plans beyond high school?
Yeah, I'm planning to go to the Wright State Lake campus, majoring in business and specializing in healthcare administration.
All right, are you still going to try to play volleyball every now and then?
Probably not, no.
Yeah, that's probably why a lot of young athletes are encouraged to play, because this is your time.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
All right. Let's meet now. I know I'm going to have this right now. We're going to meet Mia and give a chance to kind of switch gears a little bit. And first of all, Mia, for you, when did you start playing volleyball?
I would also say fifth grade, like Kira.
Fifth grade. Did you get into it together?
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Did you kind of have a similar start? Were you kind of helping out to the staff?
Yes. I have a sister that's 9 years older than me, so I've always been around volleyball, and I also managed.
And, you know, what position do you play in volleyball?
I'm a setter.
A setter. So if you would explain to people what exactly that means.
I guess you could say it's like the quarterback of the team. You run the offense and, like, lead the team. Yeah.
And for you, your own memories of playing, you know, whether it certain matches that stand out, going to state, et cetera?
Yeah, going to state and winning state last year definitely was one of my favorite memories. Like, after our win, Coach Etzler danced, and it was just really fun.
That sounds like that. Well, I understand he is the dancer, right?
Yes. Yeah,
which is great. And so, also, you know, when you play locally, you know, you play in those gyms. What is it like when you get into the Nutter Center and you're like, oh, my, this place is big?
Yeah, it's like it takes a long time for your eyes to adjust because it's a really high ceiling, but eventually it works out.
I'm good to know that. Now, for you, what's next after school?
I plan to go into a massage school somewhere.
All right. And you still got time to pick a school, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Excellent. Appreciate that. All right, Mike, let's remind people, too, you know, about the rules of volleyball, as we've heard, you know, from the positions they play. How many players are on the volleyball court at one time? And what are some of the rules as far as, you know, when you hit the ball, you only have so many, you know, maneuvers you can do before you got to put it over the net, right?
Yeah, so there's six players on the court. you can have three hits. That doesn't mean you have to use three hits, but you have three hits available when it's on your side. Just a couple of rule changes this year, like the double contact. You could always double contact the first ball. This year, you can double contact the first or second ball or the third ball, but if it goes over the net, the referee can call it now. But it used to be a judgment call for the referee, and they kind of took that away, which has been really nice.
And also, what's been amazing is when you get a couple of very skilled teams together, sometimes it seems like you've been playing that point forever. You think you're going to spike the ball, but somehow, some way, it does not hit the floor. I mean, what a skilled game it is.
Yeah, it's really skilled. There's a lot of great athletes that play. The game of volleyball involves everything. There's like power, there's strength, there's athleticism, there's finesse. And some of the rallies are just amazing. Some of the plays that these girls make. A regular volleyball rally usually lasts about 12 seconds, which doesn't seem very long, but there's so much that can happen in that 12 seconds. It's exciting. And the long ones, it's really awesome to win those too.
True. And, sometimes you see where one team loses rather decisively in the first set, and you think, well, this is going to be a short night. But it's not. You pull yourself together. You make your adjustments, right?
Right. That's the one great thing. It's good and bad, because if you win like that, that set's over. You have to, reset, and you have to focus and play clean the next set too. So, if you're not playing clean, the good thing is you can reset and you have another set. But it is good when you get that second set. I think that's a critical set, because once you have two in, you're like, okay, we can win the next one out of the next three. But it's really nice to be able to have that reset when needed.
And in your sport, girls volleyball, how many sets do you play?
We play best of five.
Best of five.
Varsity.
All right. And also the scoring system, how many points to win a set? I know this gets difficult because you have to win by more than one point, right?
Yes. So you play to 25, and you have to win by two. If you go to the fifth set, you have to play to 15, win by two.
So sometimes when people see some of these strange scores and they think, wait a minute, how did it get to be that high? It's because it was a close set, right?
Right. It was a close set, and you just have to be 2 points better than your opponent.
All right. That's a good rule, because without it, the matches would be shorter. That's no fun, right?
No. And, no fun.
And also something I'm sure you could talk about too, playing in the MAC, obviously. There's some real juggernauts in the conference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the MAC's, to me, it's one of the best conferences at any level in the state. By far, it's the best conference at a smaller school level, for sure. It's so much fun because every match in the MAC is tough. And you have to be ready to play. You have to come ready to play clean. And anybody can beat anybody on any given night.
When you talk about playing clean, share with us what that means. I assume that means don't shoot yourself in the foot.
Right. Because in volleyball, there's not a lot of sports that are like this, where you make an error, you automatically give the other team a point. Like, that doesn't happen in football. That doesn't happen really in basketball, But in volleyball, you make an error, the other team scores. So we always try to focus on making sure we're taking care of our side and playing clean.
All right. And do you also find, too, that, again, rules people may not know, like how to properly hit the ball? I know that... obviously you can probably, put your hands together almost any time, but if you're going to hit open hand, you got to watch that, right?
Yes. You can't lift the ball or people say carry it or throw it. So usually you have to have a closed fist when you're playing the ball, but, sometimes it gets called and sometimes it doesn't. So, you can set the ball over your head, swing, with an open hand and attack the ball. So there's a lot of different skills that are involved.
And how often do you practice? I can see where you'd be in that gym a lot, practicing your serve, practicing being a team, right?
We practice about 2 hours a day when we don't have a match. Preseason, sometimes we have at least a week of two-a-days during the preseason time, just because we have that day to, practice for 2 or 3 hours, rest, and come back in the gym and work on some things. So that's kind of what our practice looks like.
And also, when you get into tournament play, what is that journey like? How many matches you have to win before you get to state?
Yeah, I think this year it's 7, I believe. It has changed because the divisions have changed and they added more divisions. But we love tournament. It's just fun because, you want to be 1-0 at the end of the day, and that's really all you have to focus on. And you have to bring it, and we don't want to have any regrets. So tournament's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's for sure. And obviously memories for a lifetime.
For sure.
When you've won state, you will always have that, right?
You'll
it, you know, the years will come and go. You'll see that banner at the school and, yeah. and what have you, and you realize that that was you. That was your yeah. team.
Well, the best part is watching the girls achieve that, like just seeing their faces and knowing that what they've done and what they've done is hard and seeing them enjoy it so much. That's so worth all of it.
That's what you do it for, right?
That's what you do it for.
It's, and I think that's the reason why when a team has won, whether it's a game or a championship, you know, the coach always, they're pretty quick to say, oh, go talk to my players,
go talk
right?
to the players. They put the work in.
Yeah, they did this. Yeah. And, or they say, like, yeah, the coaches don't win, right? The players do.
That's right. That's right. That's, I mean, you know, that's why you work hard in the gym every day. And that's the best part of it is seeing them grow and achieve the goals that they've set.
Now, of course, if I were to ask your players, they probably would give you more credit than you're going to give yourself, right?
Well, I don't know. Hopefully, but we always give the credit to them because they're the ones that, you know, we always talk about. You're on the floor, you know, and we only have two timeouts per set. So.
And they say be coachable, right? And understand that somebody can see something that you don't see because you're too close to it.
That's exactly right. We love when they can coach themselves through things.
Yes, I'm sure sometimes you kind of look at them and they look at you like, I know what I did there, you know.
Yep. We've seen that look before, right?
Yeah, that's how that goes. So, listen, I want to thank all of you for coming. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Also, again, thank you to Mike Getzler and his players and Karen Wending with the D.C. trip, Paul Dingledine, girls soccer, Lori Raymovers here, Marty Shaneher with cross country, Mark Grunts with the track tomorrow from the middle school, Dan Pullman will be here. Denise Peterson will be here with the Sherlock Holmes cast. We're going to talk with them for quite a while because we're going to pretty much just kind of bring the whole cast is what we're going to do. I don't know. Maybe I'll hide something and see if they can find it. I thought Sherlock Holmes, right?
Yeah,
see if they can solve
that.
And then we're going to do 7th grade girls volleyball with Angie Rolfes, Ashley Arns of the school cafeteria. Maybe if I'm nice, they'll bring me some cafeteria pizza or something like that. And then we'll close it off with Mr. Hemelgarn. So, again, thank you to Kyle Pharmacy, Houghton Camp Funeral Home, and Inyard Interior Touch. Thank you to Lee Kieser, our producer, Brent Sellhorst, for his help. And we will talk to you tomorrow from Coldwater.